This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shah on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
What up, folks? Welcome in. It is Sharp Money here on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network, live from the D. I'm Jonathan Von Tobel, filling in for Patrick Maher, Amal Shah, and Dustin Sweetelson, both here in their usual spots. And we come off of a very, I would say, boring, to the point where I'm actually kind of proud of myself. I, old man, fell asleep on the couch while watching Duke Clemson. How about that? Like, in an awkward, weird position, to the point where I woke up and my shoulder was sore.
Not really surprised based on the way the game played out. I mean, first of all, outside of the first possession of the second half, it didn't seem like Duke was going to get much into Clemson territory. And then Clemson would take the ball inside the 10-yard line, miss field goal, fumble. Have a nice day.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. The final score, the Duke Blue Devils get the win over the Clemson Tigers. By the way, the theory that I brought up yesterday, hey, Florida State getting the big win opens the door potentially for two ACC teams. That gets slammed shut yesterday with a Clemson loss.
No, it's still open.
Oh, Duke
yeah. has a chance.
Miami, I guess, right? Miami could get a win over Texas A&M
no,
and
they
finally
don't.
Become the team that we all expected them to be. This was, Amal, I'm glad you brought this up. This is, again, one of those losses. That we saw many of these, and we usually see them in college football. Everybody likes to use the V word variance, and there was quite a bit of this in this game. When you miss multiple kicks, whether it's via blocks or just outright shanks, when you turn the ball over multiple times in the red zone, you're going to lose games, but you were much more, we'll call it, competitive than what the final result would indicate. In terms of yardage, you outgained Duke. In terms of third downs, you were better 7 of 15 compared to 5 of 15. Like, there were instances where you're looking at this and you can paint the picture of, hey, Clemson probably should have been in this more, probably should have had a lead at some point, maybe even could have won this game. So I'm very interested as we watch games like this what the market likes to do, because on the surface it's fun to go, ha-ha, Clemson's out of this, they suck, Dabo Swinney's out of it, he has no idea what he's doing anymore. But there is some nuance to a game like this, even though it's a lopsided 28-7 win.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. A couple of big takeaways for me for this game. When I look at it, I don't think Cade Klubnik is the guy long term. Here's the problem. Never threw the ball down the field. The offensive line was solid, wasn't great, wasn't elite, but it was good enough to give him some opportunities. They don't have great perimeter guys necessarily, but let me tell you, when you look at Will Shipley and Phil Maffa, they've got a great combination there. They should have utilized them more. Shipley had over 100 yards. His prop yesterday was 84.5. And, of course, I allowed the odds makers to shy me away on that one. I'm like, this guy is too good. He's too talented. It was the first game of the season, Dustin, as he shakes his head correctly in saying I should have made the play. But, to me, you look at this team. Defensively, I thought there was going to eventually be a drop-off when Venables left. I still think Venables is the best defensive coordinator in college football. And this is the second year now. You're starting to see some of the mistakes. That run that you look at Riley had for a touchdown, JBT and Dustin, that would have never happened against Venables' old defense. They would have never given up a 44-yard run when you got him stopped on third down and short, would have forced a punt. The ineptitude in the red zone with
Klubnik?
Yeah, Klubnik. I was going to say Klubnik.
I want to go Klub a lot of the times, but it's Klub. You'll get it.
They're going to be looking to Klub him pretty soon if he continues to perform the way he did. But overall,
down for murdering college kids for performing poorly.
No, I'm just talking about hitting him with a bowling pin. Just a quick Klub.
How much of the struggles on defense was from that offense just letting them down the red zone and more possessions and the turnovers? And the defense kept getting put in bad spots, having to make up for the fact the offense couldn't punch it in.
The defense, in my opinion, gave up 14 points. Right, they gave the short field after the fumble, and then the last touchdown was one where you already defeated down 21-7. I don't look at that.
That was kind of my point. The last one was a defeated touchdown. It's over. We've kind of been through this, you know, a few times now. We got nothing left, guys.
Yeah. To the point, Duke had 5.8 yards per play. It's about just slightly above average, so it's not the worst defensive performance. It's not the best defensive performance. But to your point, as the game goes along and you're consistently getting let down, go back to last year with the Denver Broncos, right? At one point, the Broncos were so good defensively, and then you keep having your offense just go out there and give you nothing, where eventually the stats are going to get watered down because you're just out there all the time, and eventually you're going to get taxed. So I thought that was kind of part of what you're alluding to there.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, both of you guys, in terms of what you're talking about. But I'll tell you, for me, the big takeaway in this is, let's say Clemson capitalized on their opportunities in the red zone. Two touchdowns on two fumbles and a field goal that was shanked from, 26 yards or even less than that. So that's 17 points. But the first touchdown they got, that was on Duke. Should have never fielded the football there. What are you saving, 3 yards on that bounce? It wasn't like it was some earth-shattering bounce that was going to go back 20 yards. The risk versus the reward isn't there in that situation. A bad play by Duke allows Clemson to get 7 points. More importantly, though, when I look at this team, You know, we talked about this. By the way, JBT, I'm sorry. I've been saving this one. You said, well, they don't have Garrett Riley as their OC. Thank God TCU didn't have Garrett Riley as their OC on Saturday. They might have only scored 14 points. They got the ball first and go at the one-yard line.
I, too, like to judge entire things off of one game.
No. Hey, hold on a second. That's a fair rebuttal. But you mentioned to me that they didn't have their offensive coordinator.
Yes.
So I wanted to talk about his ineptitude today at what he did at Clemson.
Wait, but you – hold on. Okay, I'll give you one back.
Go ahead.
Which one is it? Is it Klubnik or is it the offensive coordinator? Because to your point, when you're looking at this offensive production and what he did, Klubnik yesterday, 43 attempts, 21 of them were 9 yards downfield or behind the line of scrimmage. Further than 9 yards downfield or behind the line of scrimmage. That's a lot of dinking and dunking and nonsense. That could be play calling. That could also be your quarterback failing to actually get the opportunities he was given.
Well, that's a fair point. So that's on Garrett Riley. But to me, when I look at it.
Come on. Reel it back in.
Hold on.
It's a defense. On defense.
What I'm saying, a couple things. They had the ball first and go at the one-yard line when Shipley got tackled at the one-yard line. Mm-hmm. What did they decide to do? They didn't go inside handoff to Phil Maffa. They decided, we're going to run a play with Klubnik. We're going to circle back, and he slips and falls and loses 5 yards. Then they end up missing the field goal. Garrett Riley's not taking shots down the field because, to me, it shows in practice. This is a guy that's not throwing the ball down the field. He's not pushing the ball down the field.
I don't know about you guys. I saw a lot of DJ Uiagalelei yesterday and Cade Klubnik in the sense that he does not look free. He does not look comfortable. He is very scared to make a play and make a mistake. There are not a lot of risks being taken. And in the red zone, he just looked so tentative, and that's what led to the turnovers.
So let's play an exercise here. So DJU is gone. Offensive coordinator is gone.
Yep.
New offensive coordinator is in. What's the common denominator?
Dabo Swinney.
Yep. Let's hear from Dabo after the game about the loss to Duke.
We just self-imploded in some critical situations. And, again, you got to finish. And it was routine stuff. I mean, the basics, the fundamentals, you know, ball handling, just some basic stuff, not jumping offside on first and goal from the one, you know, basic stuff. And, you know, that's you know, it's just, it's the weirdest game I've ever been a part of. I mean, I've been beat. I've had my butt kicked many times in my career, but I can honestly say that's one of the strangest games I've ever been a part of.
Word of the day for Dabo, basic. Is Clemson now back to being a basic program?
I think Clemson's looks like they're getting ready to be relegated to where they were for about 40 years after Danny Ford won the national title in, what was it, 81? And then they disappeared for a long time for about 30-plus years. Look, he had two generational quarterbacks in Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence at the collegiate level. They were incredible players. But
they're going to say Taj Boyd.
Taj Boyd wasn't bad.
He
but
was nice.
No, he was the beginning. He was the beginning.
He had Taj and C.J. Spiller.
Yep.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Sammy Watkins.
Yeah, it's
how did they not win at all?
Because you got to play defense and you got to have other guys, the other 19 guys have to be able to play, and that's the problem here. You know, they're good in certain positions, but they're not good across the board. I'll tell you what, the one thing we're not talking about, Mike Elko and that defense deserve a ton of credit.
Hmm?
Look, I know a couple of those turnovers were unforced, and one Klubnik pulls the ball back and Shipley fumbles the ball, and then you have the missed field goal. That's 10 points there. But again, they got gifted 7 points on that fumble on the punt return. To me, though, Mike Elko's defense really showed up and showed out. I think Leonard Riley is going to be a tremendous quarterback. Riley Leonard.
I feel like if his name was Leonard Riley, he'd be a middle linebacker.
Yeah,
but Riley Leonard is a quarterback.
Thank you. Anyway, he's going to be effective against a lot of these other ACC teams. They're going to be just fine. But, look, this does not come as much of a surprise for me with Clemson in terms of the inconsistency. I thought they were going to have a great year. I'm not saying that because I thought their alternate win total was in play, JBT. But it shouldn't come as a shock, though, in certain areas they haven't improved.
I will just say this. Riley Leonard's athleticism is awesome. And, again, he's much like, I think one of you called him, Daniel Jones. Right. And that's really what it is. Because we are criticizing Cade Klubnik for, right, the lack of shots downfield and whatnot. Average depth of target for Klubnik was 5.6 yards downfield. It was 5.4.
But it was working. That's the difference.
I mean, he got a 60.8 passing grade from PFF. It wasn't incredible.
No, but the difference is he's playing Clemson's defense. He's playing Duke's defense.
And that's a fair point.
I mean, like, my big takeaway is, like, how did you guys get to work today? Like, how did you get here to downtown Vegas?
Did you get one with a fire in your belly?
What mode of transportation did you use?
Automobile.
Automobile.
Yeah, see, Dabo Sweeney's still using a horse and buggy because the world has evolved in college football, and he's failing to do so.
I got
to
tell you, we'll have an old clip from Dabo coming up a little bit later in the show, but the whole shtick is probably going to wear thin at some point when you're losing games.
The whole country said, we have these needs. We're going to address it in the transfer portal because those are the rules. We're going to offer money because we're allowed to now. Dabo Sweeney said, you know what, guys? We're going to run it back even though we failed short of our goal a year ago.
You know, it's funny you said that. You bring up a great point because I was watching Will Shipley last night. Will Shipley, I remember he was a big-time five-star recruit when he got there. He's had a good career at Clemson, but I'm telling you right now, if he went to Alabama, to Georgia, to Ohio State, to Michigan, this guy would have been in New York City already. He would have had 1,500-plus yards. We would have talked about him in a different way, in a different manner. It's unbelievable to me, JVT, how Shipley's the – listen, he makes great plays for you consistently, and this is a perfect example of Clemson football the last season plus. They get the ball at the one-yard line. No, we're not going to give it to Shipley or Maffa. We're going to go with our quarterback.
Well, Charleston Southern gets Clemson on the bounce back here next week, so we'll see if they can actually do that. For Duke, by the way, they get Lafayette next week, so we'll see what that looks like. All right, when we come back, we do have to hit up the National Football League because we did get some big news, and it is impactful. The first game of the NFL season coming up on Thursday, guys, the Kansas City Chiefs looking to open up the season. However, a little bit of injury news. Travis Kelce seems like a hyperextended knee, so we'll see if that is going to be pretty impactful as we move forward into that and as we look at the market and what it's going to do. But I know you guys weren't excited for it. The NFL's coming up here in a couple of days. I'm kind of back in. I was doing some modeling earlier today, and I was like, boy, oh, boy. I'm ready
frontal?
To go. No, rear, actually. They really like it. You do it on the back end. All right, we'll come back. We'll hit up the Kansas City Chiefs and the opening day in the National Football League when we return here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Updated NFL betting guides out, folks. Make sure you get it. I know the season starts in 2 days, but it's never too late to get ready. Throughout the NFL preseason, VSIN experts have been reevaluating every team to give you the betting edge. Updated NFL betting guide is going to have picks from every on-air host, team-specific preseason analysis, and more. If you want the best and most comprehensive collection of picks, predictions, and previews, now is the time to become a VSIN Pro subscriber for as low as $19. Sign up today. Get all your options at VSIN.com/subscribe. Now, one of the things you can't foresee, obviously, in the National Football League is injuries, and especially when it comes really close to the beginning of the season. So news today is that, one, Travis Kelce is hyperextended his knee, is officially questionable for the matchup with the Detroit Lions on opening night coming up on Thursday. The market has responded. We are down to as low as 5 in multiple spots in favor of the Kansas City Chiefs still, with a total of 53, or where we're sitting at, Circus Sports and others, around town Circus Sports, 52.5. So I'm all. The questions about the Kansas City Chiefs coming into this year revolved around that wide receiver room once again. This has been a room that has been overhauled, a lot of young bodies in there, unproven talent. The one proven commodity catching balls was going to be, or at least the most proven commodity, was going to be Travis Kelce. Seemed like it was going to be a big year for him, but now we have questions as to whether or not he is going to be available. Is Travis Kelce, as we have seen the market respond here, worth about a point, or even some spots, 1.5?
Seems a little bit high for a non-quarterback player, but, you know, he's one of the few guys, a handful of guys in the NFL you would look at that has such an impact. Look, Justin Jefferson, for my money, JBT is the best receiver in the NFL, but I would assign a greater value with Travis Kelce being out than Justin Jefferson simply because of what he provides Kansas City, not only on third down, but particularly in the red zone, inside the end zone area. It's Mahomes' go-to guy. He can make so many different plays off of the fact that Kelce's in the lineup. His size, his ability, all those things are a factor. This would be interesting, an important game here for Kansas City. I thought it would be one they'd have a great opportunity to be able to win. Not saying they can't, but remember, Chris Jones is expected to miss this game at this point in time. And, of course, you mentioned Kelce. So those are some key cogs that are out of the lineup potentially.
The names that you're going to have to get familiar with here if he cannot go, it is going to be Kadarius Toney, Sky Moore, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, Noah Gray, Jerick McKinney. And then you have some others, of course, making up the rest of the depth chart. But this is – in the NFL nowadays, the wide receiver is becoming more and more important. We see it now all the time, right? Especially when you have a dominant number one wide receiver. Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, these guys have changed things. We'll go to A.J. Brown as well in Philadelphia. They are that impactful. I think you can make the argument that dominant pass catchers are worth something. So maybe there is a case to be made that maybe the point downgrade is there. But what I'm curious is, let's say Travis Kelce can't play. The market does this thing where it does two moves. It does the initial move when the guy is listed as questionable. Then it does another move when the guy's officially ruled out. You do wonder how low this gets. And is there a buy point if Kelce does not play for you that you come back in on Kansas City?
Look, I'm probably not going to touch this game except for an in-play opportunity. But to me, with Kansas City, I would assume if it gets to 4.5 or 5 even, you'll start to see money come in on the Chiefs. This is still the defending Super Bowl champions at home. This is still the Detroit Lions in a road game on a Thursday night spot. It's a big opportunity for them. And again, last time I checked, I think 15 is still the quarterback in Kansas City.
Yes, it is. Yes.
Yeah, so I like my chances there.
Well, and that's and the other side of this, because we talk so much about these sides, the other interesting part is with the total being as low as 52, right? Last I checked, Detroit, they did add some bodies to that defense. They were one of the worst defenses in the National Football League last year. The Chiefs are missing their best defensive player. There's still plenty of room for this thing to be somewhat high scoring, even without a guy like Kelce available.
Completely agree. You mentioned Chris Jones being out, but I like the term you use, bodies. You weren't very specific in the sense that you don't believe in this Detroit defense.
I mean, when you look at the defensive backs specifically that they added, there are a bunch of guys who, if you look at them, and I do like PFF grading and whatnot, but other metrics that are average to above average guys at their position. And when I like, my thing is this on defense, and actually really in anything, if you are the absolute worst at something, Amal, what is the actual best leap you can make statistically? And when you all go back to, you know, the Chargers last year, for example, heading into the regular season last year, I did not believe that the Chargers were going to be much better against the run. You looked at the bodies, I'll use the term again, that they added a defensive tackle, and I'm like, a bunch of these guys grayed out to be like below average to average defensive tackles.
Right.
That's not taking the third worst rush defense to a top 10, top 12 level. And then, sure enough, what happened, they were, again, one of the worst rush defenses in the NFL. I just wonder how much better you get when you talk about adding average to above-average guys, a defensive back, an interior linebacker in the draft. Like, I don't know how much better you're getting when you were, by some metrics, the third worst defense in the NFL.
Hey, you're absolutely right. Referencing Jack Campbell comes in from Iowa for this team, right in the Mike linebacker's position. Still some question marks. I'm not a big C.J. Gardner-Johnson guy in the secondary there for Detroit. Tracy Walker there as well as Kirby Joseph. So I think there's going to be some opportunities. And if you're the Kansas City Chiefs, if you're Kadarius Toney, if you're Sky Moore, this is a great opportunity for you to showcase yourself national television game against an opponent that's getting a ton of credit. How good they are remains to be seen, but this is a great opportunity for some guys that are unheralded.
And this is because we're coming up on the season. Dustin was just talking about signing up for Survivor, but signing up for a football contest. These contest lines come out tomorrow. So now what happens when you get some of these contest lines? What are the Kansas City Chiefs? John Von Model loved the Kansas City Chiefs. Had it projected as a 10-point win. Now can't use it. No way. Don't know what Travis Kelce's status is going to be. What do you use? What are you hanging up? What's a mall hanging up at the book of a mall for a contest line?
Well, this is unique, though, right? Because if you want to take the risk here, if Kelce doesn't play, and for survivor aspect, you roll with Detroit here, they'd lose. You can still buy back for Sunday.
Yeah.
It's an interesting spot for Kelce to be missing because it's the standalone game and the rules allow you to buy back if you lose on Thursday Night Football.
Yeah, to me,
I'm not doing it because it's my $1,000 and it means a lot to me.
I would put this line at 5 because I think that's where we're probably going to end up closing. And maybe 4.5. Look, here's the thing, though, the one thing that could get a little bit out of hand. There's a tremendous amount of affinity for Detroit out
there. Yes, there
is. And so I think you could see this one come down maybe to 4.5, but I don't see a scenario where it gets to 4, do you?
I would think not, but a standalone NFL game with a team that's missing its second-best player and another team on the other side that seems to be the apple of the eye of a lot of folks, we'll say. We've seen crazier things happen, and I get it's the National Football League. Numbers tend to get tight. But if there was a game which got a little wonky and got down to like 4, if Travis Kelce didn't play and there was more public sentiment, it would be a game like this, would it not?
Yeah, there's no question about it. You mentioned it. I mean, you talk about the perfect standalone situation. First game of the season, it's the Chiefs. Detroit's drawn a lot of interest from professional bettors, so this should be a fun one to see. Look, for me, I think Detroit was probably going to lose the game. Now it seems to be a little bit more in peril, but I thought a good opportunity, if you like Detroit to win the NFC North, let the Lions lose the first game. Let Minnesota beat Tampa, and then you're going to get a much better number on the Lions to win the division.
Well, I don't know. The Chicago Bears are coming, right? So the market's telling us.
Maybe. But, I mean, the Bears play the Packers, so you're going to have one division opponent that's sitting at 1-0.
Packers are going to go 1-0. Tell you that. Another John Von Model special. Actually, the market agrees, though. That thing was as high as like 3 in the offseason. We're down to 1 for Chicago. Dustin, you're making faces. Why?
Man, y'all love Jordan Love. You love Love.
I love the Packers team.
That's my argument. Yeah. I agree that the team is better than everybody else in the division. Their 21 guys are better than the other 21 starters in that division, in my opinion.
How'd those 21 guys do with Aaron Rodgers last year?
Look, sometimes things go sideways. It's just the way it goes in the NFL.
My rebuttal, better than the Bears.
Bears got better, though. Bears got better.
Allegedly.
Green Bay downgrades at the most important position.
I'm not a fan of, again, in today's NFL, we're so offensive-oriented. I'm not a fan of if your improvements are, like, linebackers. You know, like, look, here we go. We got some guys there.
Pretty fast, like, linebackers, though.
Sure, maybe.
Yeah, Minnesota was great with Barr and Kendricks chasing guys down every time.
Yeah, Barr wasn't really. He was more of a pass rusher than a true linebacker.
My point is, JVT's right. You got to improve at key positions.
Justin Fields was throwing to XFL receivers last year.
And he was terrible on those throws.
Yeah, because the XFL receivers
stunk. No, stop. You got to watch. I like Justin Fields, but you got to at least evaluate it somewhat. Like, well, what's the word I'm looking for here? Accurately, I guess.
I know what you're saying.
I'm biased.
Let's see how he performs, though, without an offensive line that's not running a car wash.
Sure.
I mean, they were letting everybody through, right? I mean, it was like, hey, you want a sack? Go ahead, try and get one. I mean, the guy hit, it was 7th in rushing yards in the National Football League last year. That's insanity. Yeah.
That's all they had.
That's it. That's every single play. I'll just say that going back to it again, like same thing with Detroit, actually. I just don't know how far you can realistically expect the worst team and the worst defense. How much you can really make that leap? How far really is that leap? Especially when you're talking about where the market is. 7.5 wins, freaking 20-1 to win MVP, things like that.
This would be a good assignment for me to research, though, this week then. Teams that return a head coach and a quarterback and the largest win total jump they made the following year, last 10 years. Head coach and quarterback are back. To make the jump people are projecting Chicago to do, I agree, is a little outrageous.
I mean, I would think I would want more of an offensive connection there, right, a head coach. I would think that skews a little bit more positive, but I get the point. All right, we'll have to come back to this. We have plenty left to, of course. On the other side, though, here on Sharp Money, Dave Harding's going to join us. We have more Duke. We have more Dabo as well. We're getting a blast from the past from Dabo Swinney. But is this, like, I don't want to ask, is it real? Because Duke seems to be a very legitimate, good, solid ACC team. But what is the ceiling for Duke? And what is the ceiling for Riley Leonard? We'll talk about that when we return here on Sharp Money. We are live from the D. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A lot of stuff for you to use up on the website. One of those, the betting splits. You get money and bets for every single game. They're updated every 10 minutes. And guess what? They're from DraftKings, and they're not just for today's games, but future events as well. Betting splits, another way VSiN's here to help. Check them out today. Betting splits for every game at VSiN.com. We're out here live at the D. Now, walking in, the environment's fantastic. You know, early Vegas, guys in, like, Borat thongs looking for people to take pictures with. Environment, though, I don't think as wild, would we say, last night after that Duke-Clemson game. Let's get a read on it. Dave Harding's with us, Duke radio analyst Dave Harding Jr. up on X. How was it, man? What was the environment like after that big win last night for the Blue Devils?
I don't know if it was Borat level, but it was pretty crazy. They had plenty of time to plan it out, too, as the Blue Devils started to pull away in the fourth quarter. So a little different of a field storm, if you will, because you know, oftentimes you see the people jumping over the side of the stadium to get to the field once the clock strikes zero. They were already stacked up along the end zone and the sidelines, almost like standing room only, pit level area of a concert, and just take in the field as soon as the game was over. A wild scene and something that Duke hasn't been able to pull off in beating a top 10 AP opponent since 1989. So certainly worthy of celebration.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned that going back 34 years. Mike Elko and the job he's done has just been absolutely tremendous. In the loss, I thought the one thing that got a little bit lost in the shuffle overall was the performance of the defense. Just talk to me a little bit about what your expectations of this team are on the defensive side of the ball and what they could potentially look to accomplish in the ACC this year.
Yeah, you know, week one, there's always some uncertainty going in just with some new faces. They brought in several transfers in the secondary, players that had experience elsewhere, both in the SEC, SEC, Big Ten. And so you didn't really know how they were going to integrate in with the team. The defensive line was one where I think you could confidently say the Blue Devils felt good, especially with the interior defensive line. But I thought the way that they played complete defense, bringing all different levels of the front, that middle area, linebacker, middle of the field coverage, and then deep coverage in the passing game was impressive and one of the better defensive performances we've seen out of the Blue Devils. Also, it's important to note the turnover battle that occurred during the game. The first half, Blue Devils giving up two turnovers. In the second half, and this is when it really got crazy, you know, Clemson finding their way down the field several times, and the Duke defense finding a way to force fumbles, interception taking place really to ice the game at the very end. But the Duke defense helping their offense out after a few miscues and taking the football away and ending the day in the positive side of the turnover mark.
Duke radio analyst Dave Harding with us. So, Dave, how do we realistically look at this game without taking away from Duke? And what I mean by that is, right, there were some variants in this for Clemson as well. When we're talking about multiple missed kicks, the red zone turnovers. So how do you evaluate a game like this where I don't think the final score really indicated how the game played out, but without taking away from what that Duke defensive performance was specifically?
Yeah, that's a really hard question to answer. I've struggled with it myself because, you know, on one side you say, okay, Clemson had miscues and they should have had more points, should have been a closer game, especially in the fourth quarter. They let several opportunities slip through fingers. On the other side of things, Duke wasn't perfect either, and they had several miscues on their end, namely giving up the 7 points that they did. If they had not muffed a punt return and turned the football over after forcing Clemson to punt and getting them off the field, you could make the argument that it would have been a complete shutout. Obviously, one thing typically will have a cause and effect on later parts and other parts of the game, but so it's kind of it's tough to get a feel for. One thing I do know is the Clemson offense moved the ball up and down the field. They had over 200 yards passing, over 200 yards rushing. They were effective. They just didn't have any of the big home run plays and scoring plays that you need. Wild to see that a second half, entire second half, there was no punt or score for Clemson. And I don't know the last time I've been associated with a game where a team did not punt or score. Definitely tough to get a feel for what Clemson is capable of. I think they're going to have to find a go-to receiver. Cade Klubnik has to get more comfortable. There were a few opportunities early in the game where Duke dropped interceptions. And so he's got to get a little bit more in with Garrett Riley, the new offensive coordinator system. And at this point, I think all you can do is credit the Duke defense, because that's one thing we know, that they played very well. And it's kind of one of the few variables in a wild game that you can kind of rest assured that they seem to be solid.
Dave, you mentioned the Duke offense have got some things to improve upon, but to me, I thought this is arguably the toughest defense they're going to potentially face all year. How well does that bode for this offense and what they're potentially capable of doing based on last year's performance?
Yeah, you know, I think it all comes down to Riley Leonard, the quarterback, you know, starting to get a little bit more attention after the season that he had a year ago. And then this game, I mean, he explodes onto the scene. I think that they still have a next level that they can achieve from a consistency standpoint. If you were watching the game in the second half, there were several instances where, in fact, back-to-back series where the Blue Devils went three and out, some inaccurate passes by Riley Leonard, forcing the defense to be on the field a little bit longer. And so I think as a complete game, when you survey what that needs to look like, there is – a little bit more consistency that they need to find from a big play opportunity standpoint. They've got most of their productivity from a season ago returning at wide receiver. Running back room is stacked. And then again, Riley Leonard had arguably the highlight of the night in a game that had all sorts of crazy plays, a 44-yard touchdown run where he looked like he was completely dead in the rights, tackled for a loss, works his way out of an arm tackle, tight ropes down the sideline and gets into the end zone. So whenever he's on the field, when he's the signal caller for the Blue Devils, they're going to have a chance just because of the dual threat nature that he has and the mindset that he brings to the game.
Dave Harding, Duke radio analyst. So how good does this get then? I mean, you look at their schedule, how are they not 4-0 heading into the game against Notre Dame on September 30th? And then the rest of the way there, only needing two wins to get to that bowl eligibility and maybe even better. Their win total before the season began at 6.5, but that's a win against Clemson that can really change the outlook for a win total perspective.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. There are a lot of people coming into the year, they're like, you know, Duke had a great season last year. You win 9 games. You shocked everybody. Mike Elko in his first year as a head coach, kind of beginner's luck, I guess, if you will. And then, you know, good luck recreating that moving forward, especially with a schedule that is much tougher than it was a season ago. And then you kind of silence all of that doubt in week one by picking up this win over the top 10 team. And you mentioned the next couple of games. I mean, I think the best way that you can look at this, if you're a Duke football player or fan, is you got to just start stacking wins. And I think from a belief perspective and knowing that you've got the talent. And last night, looking at a comparison of position groups on the field, I don't know the last time that you could say this about a Duke football team, but when it came to a comparison between Clemson, number 9, and unranked Duke, I think Duke had a wash or maybe a slight advantage in just about every position group comparison. So if that's something that they can take into the rest of the games, they still got a tough schedule. They're hosting NC State at home. You mentioned Notre Dame. They've got Florida State on the road later in the year. I mean, it's definitely going to be tough, but they've got a chance to really use this as a springboard and start stacking these wins.
Dave, we've got about 45 seconds remaining. Clemson, when you look at them in comparison to the rest of the ACC, what is still their opportunity in terms of where you think they could go?
I got a feeling that they still have a lot of improvement to do between week one and week two. They've got a chance to iron some things out. They've got people in the right position. Right? Cade Klubnik's a good quarterback. Well, he won 3 consecutive state titles in high school in Texas. Very difficult thing to do. I think their defense, the nucleus of that defensive front, 2 linebackers are going to be playing on Sundays. Once they figure out more of their offensive woes and going to go through some growing pains with a new offensive coordinator, I think they've got a chance to be really good. Will Shipley, he's going to be your bell cow running the football. Wide receiver, somebody's got to step up there to be a deep play threat. They need to find someone to go to in the wide receiver.
Dave Harding again, Duke radio analyst. Dave, we appreciate some time. Have a good season, man, and thanks for it.
Thank you, guys.
Got it. Dave Harding Jr. up on Twitter if you want to give a follow. X, I apologize. Can't wait to see it. That's like we talked about, same thing with Colorado. That's a win that makes a difference on a win total. To win as a, you know, double-digit underdog, that's, you could essentially not chalk it up, but you're going to be upset if you don't go over that win total if you bet it. All right, when we come back, Kenny Albert, NFL and Fox announcer, is going to be with us. He's got a pretty good game on deck this weekend. We'll discuss.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Best Thursday of the year is coming up, and it's all about NFL opening night. Football's back, and DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, is hooking up new customers with a can't-miss offer to celebrate. Place your first $5 NFL bet and score $200 in bonus bets instantly. Don't wait till kickoff to get in on the hype. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code SHARP. New customers get $200 in bonus bets instantly when you bet just $5. That's code SHARP. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. I've had this $5 bill in my pocket for like 5, 6, 7 days. I don't know why. but it's every time I think about it when I have that. All right, let's talk some football, man. It is around the corner, and Kenny Albers, nice enough to give us some time here today. The name might sound familiar. He's going to be with the Jags and Colts. Week one, best game on the board as an Indianapolis Colts fan. There's no bias there. You can also check out Kenny's new book coming up, A Mic for All Seasons. You can find that wherever you get your books. I think we say that with podcasts as well. Kenny, thank you for the time. We appreciate it. So let's start with this. As I said, I'm a Colts fan. Is there an excitement for you to watch the next Hall of Fame quarterback for the Indianapolis Colts, Anthony Richardson, this weekend?
Well, there really is. First of all, thanks for having me on as we look forward to week one in the NFL season. But no, really excited to get things started with my partners, Jonathan Vilma and Shannon Spake. It's the 30th season of the NFL on Fox, which is kind of hard to believe. Yesterday was the 29th anniversary of the first game I called, which was the L.A. Rams prior to moving to St. Louis when they took on the Arizona Cardinals back on 9/4/94. But this year we start in Indy, and really looking forward to watching Anthony Richardson watch the last preseason game against the Eagles, and should be a lot of fun. Jacksonville coming off a great second-half run, won a playoff game last year, so couldn't be more excited to be heading to Indy this weekend.
Kenny, when you look at this matchup, the Jacksonville Jaguars had a good year last year. What are your expectations potentially for this team?
Well, I think they should have playoff aspirations once again. Doug Peterson's done a terrific job. They started the year 2-6 last season and then went 7-2 down the stretch and had the big comeback in the playoffs. They won their last five games, so I think it's onward and upward for the Jaguars. And on the other side, you have the Colts, who really struggled during the second half of the season, losing their last seven games. They have a new head coach, new quarterback. And, you know, week one, everybody has the same record. So a lot of excitement all around the league. And, you know, I know you guys will have a close eye on the Thursday night game and then all of the other matchups Sunday and Monday.
So in your – because you've done – we were actually just talking about this before we had you on. I know you've been on a lot of baseball games. You've been all over the place. You work a lot. Have you had a chance to watch the preseason version of Anthony Richardson? What have you thought of what you've seen from him in a Colts uniform?
Saw bits and pieces early in the preseason, and then I watched the entire game, the last game against the Eagles. And, you know, obviously started only 13 games in college. He's young, but I know there's so much excitement in Indianapolis. You know, unfortunately, he won't have Jonathan Taylor there for the first 4 weeks, but some other good young weapons on the Colts offense. But, you know, you look at his size, first of all, and the arm strength, the athleticism, and, you know, just seems pretty poised. And from what I've read, you know, really smart, both on and off the field. So we'll sit down with him on Friday, so I could probably give you a better answer after that when we meet with him at the Colts facility on Friday afternoon, but impressed with what I've seen so far.
Kenny, obviously the Jets signed Aaron Rodgers. What are your expectations of what the Jets could be this year?
I think they could have a real strong year. Last year, you look at their defense, one of the top units in the league under Robert Saleh, and they have some really terrific young playmakers on the offensive side. And then they bring in Aaron Rodgers and Dalvin Cook. And I really feel like if Rodgers stays healthy, this could certainly be a playoff team and a team that could perhaps go pretty far in the postseason. You know, he's a guy I've watched, you know, as you have for almost two decades now. And I've called a lot of his games and have had a chance to sit down with him on numerous occasions in preparing for those games. And, you know, he's got a great attitude. He really seems to be enjoying his time in the New York area, both on and off the field. You know, he's been to Knicks playoff games, Rangers playoff games. He was out at the U.S. Open a couple of days ago enjoying the tennis. And, you know, reading his quotes, he just seems so happy. It's a fresh start. And as he said, not to disparage any of the people or times that he had in Green Bay, but it's a whole new experience. He talked about the view going through the Lincoln Tunnel into Manhattan and just, you know, just gazing at all the buildings and attending all these sporting events. You know, certainly, and I love Green Bay. It's one of my favorite places to go, and I'm looking forward to a week three game there that our crew has against New Orleans. But I'm sure it's a whole different world for Aaron Rodgers living in New Jersey and being so close to New York.
Kenny Albert with us, play-by-play voice on Fox Sports. So let's talk about the news of the day. Travis Kelce, hyperextended knee. You know, focusing on Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City, the questions were already about the wide receiver room. What was your expectations for Kansas City with a second consecutive season of, hey, the pass catchers maybe aren't there outside of Kelce, and now him with a knee injury?
Right, that would obviously be a big blow depending on how much time he would miss. I just saw the reports a little while ago But I still think the Chiefs, you know, as long as Patrick Mahomes is there and Andy Reid, certainly one of the favorites in the AFC. And I was so impressed in watching so far the first four episodes of the quarterback series on Netflix. And you really had a close look at the inner workings and Patrick Mahomes on the other 6 days of the week when he's working out both at the Chiefs facility and with his own personal trainers. The amount of work, you know, I think we all assumed how much work goes into it with a guy like Mahomes, but to actually see it with the cameras behind the scenes, it's kind of astounding, you know, because 30, 40 years ago, you know, the quarterbacks weren't doing this stuff off the field. And now you see so many of them who, you know, not only during the hours they spend at the team facility, but the amount of time they put in elsewhere, and that's certainly one of the reasons why Mahomes is you know, one of the best, if not the best, quarterbacks in the NFL right now.
He's great, but since you watched him recently, he's kind of an exaggerator, right? Like, Max Crosby was not punching him that hard in the first episode.
Yeah, I did see that episode. You know, it's the gamesmanship, and again, I haven't finished the series, but no, you're right. You know, that goes on, I'm sure, all the time. I used to hear the stories from one of my former broadcast partners, the late, great Tony Siragusa. And he would always talk about, you know, what really goes on at the bottom of those piles and some of the conversations. You know, I remember him, we sat down with Brett Favre before a Packers game, and they were reliving one of the games they had played against each other where they were just giving it to each other on the opposite sides of the line of scrimmage about Brett was, you know, just commenting on how big Tony's head was and how does it fit inside the helmet. So, you know, those are some of the stories that, you know, you don't get to hear until you know, you're with one of the people involved, or perhaps you do if they're mic'd up. But, you know, it's a lot of fun to watch and hear about that kind of stuff.
Kenny, off topic, take people through what a week is like for you when the season starts. You travel, you meet with how many players, coaches, different from when those two teams, when you have the team meetings, and just what it's like. I don't think too many people have an insight into what a play-by-play guy does besides the 3 to 4 hours than when they're on air.
Well, I probably don't spend as much time as coaches do because you hear all those crazy stories about Joe Gibbs sleeping in his office back in the day or John Gruden waking up at 3:17 every morning. But it is a lot of hours, and I've never really tallied it up. But I think during the football season, it's probably anywhere between 20, 30, 40 hours when you add it all up. Monday through Thursday, and I know you're scheduled to have Ian Eagle on as well, and I'm sure he'll tell you the same thing. But the first 4 days of the week, whether it's myself, my analyst Jonathan Vilma, Shannon Spake, who's our sideline reporter, the producer, director, we're all on our own wherever we are, either home or on the road, in my case, doing other sports come October. And I really start Monday morning watching each team's previous game and preparing charts and spotting boards and going through press releases and statistics and every article that I can get my hands on from both cities. And then Friday, we usually fly in the morning to the home city. We'll go to practice. We'll sit down with 3 or 4 or 5 players and coaches from the home team. We'll do the same thing with the visiting team when they get to their hotel on Saturday. And then we have our own production meeting Saturday night where we go over some of the storylines and the graphics and the video elements. So we don't just show up at 12:59 on Sunday. There's a lot of work and travel involved, but it's fun. You know, it beats doing something you hate for a living, sitting at a desk, you know, for 9-10 hours a day. It's just a lot of fun, and, you know, this is year 30, like I said, and my book's coming out next month, A Mic for All Seasons, and I tell a lot of stories about the preparation and the travel and the 225-plus color analysts that I've worked with and memorable games from each sport. So, again, there's a lot of work that goes into it, but I wouldn't want to be doing anything else.
Yep, released on October 10th, so make sure you check that out again. The title, A Mic for All Seasons, 3 decades announcing the NFL, NHL, NBA, MLB, and Olympics. Kenny, we appreciate the time. You do awesome work. Thanks for spending some time with us today.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, you should look at the play-by-play. Like, we have our own Ben Wilson, who's a very professional, buttoned-up man. The charts that these guys come up with play-by-play-wise, Kenny's got one on his Twitter account, the celebration of the 30th anniversary set on Fox. It's insanity.
It really is. I know. I've talked to Ian Eagle about that. It's incredible.
It's what your prep looks like.
100%.
My
prep is making sure I hit the dry cleaner once a month and the shirt's ready to go.
All right. We'll come back. We got plenty left, including, we mentioned, Ian Eagle's going to be with us, too, in the next hour.